Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Trinitha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop. And today's workshop is I Can't Remember to Take My Pills on Time. Please Help, a Practical Guide to Follow. Now, this is part two of a three-part series on Going the Distance, Thriving and Surviving with CML, with Chronic Myelogenous Leukemia. Today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration we have been able to reach so many of you. We have on the call today over 554 participants, and you come from all over the United States, from all different parts of this country, from all different regions of the country. And we also have international participants from Canada, China, Jordan, Malaysia, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So it really is a credit to each of you that you have chosen to spend the next hour with us. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's an outline that has been prepared by our speakers, and there's information about our speakers, as well as all the collaborating organizations, as resources for each of you. And there also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the workshops and the programs that you'd like us to offer going forward. And this series is one that many of you have recommended because of the challenges of taking pills on schedule. We call that adherence. It's really, it's very challenging. So please do fill out the evaluation forms. Tell us what you'd like us to offer, and we'll try very hard to follow your recommendations. This program today is made possible by a charitable contribution from Bristol-Myers Squibb, and I really want to thank them for their support, not only of this program, but the entire series. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Elias Jabbour. Dr. Jabbour is Assistant Professor, Department of Leukemia, Division of Cancer Medicine, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Jabbour is going to address why it is so difficult to take your pills on schedule, research on pill taking and adherence, and talking with your healthcare team about tips to improve adherence. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Jabbour.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner, for this introduction. Good afternoon or good evening, everybody. Depends where you are calling from. So it's my pleasure to be here today. Chronic myeloid leukemia is a very exciting field. Really, progress has been made, and today our patients with chronic myeloid leukemia can hope to have a normal lifespan, living normally, and CML has become like hypertension or diabetes, where we can take a pill and we can have a normal lifespan. So really great success, unlike other cancers, and hopefully one day with other cancers we can have similar results. But that will come at a price. It's becoming a chronic disease, and therefore we take pills, and we have to take pills every day. Otherwise, our leukemia can come back, and that may not be very pleasant. We know, for example, in diabetes and hypertension and other diseases, where really if we miss the treatment, if we don't take the treatment as is, we can run through complications. Diabetes, we can have nephropathy or kidney problem or eye problem. So we need really to take the treatment as prescribed. It's easy to take the treatment for a week or 10 days, but sometimes having treatment taken for life, it's not an easy task, as we do expect, or physician, or mid-level, or medical providers do think. So we do miss sometimes the medication, and sometimes it happens. So will that have any consequence? My patient will come to me and say, well, doctor, if I miss a pill, will that have any implication? Well, studies have done, and they've shown that adherence is a key issue. If you take your medicine as expected and merely don't miss any dose, you will have a better results. Merely you can achieve a deeper responses. Your responses will be really sustainable. You don't run a risk of transformation, of progression, or treatment resistance. We know, for example, when you have an infection and you take an antibiotic, you should take it for 10 days or whatever prescribed, because if we take it less, we can have resistance. Same when we talk about leukemia, you need to take your treatment really on time as prescribed in order to keep your leukemia under control and nothing in the future will happen. You may say sometimes I have insurance copay, I have problems. Would that making treatment on time make any difference? Well, you know, if you think about healthcare costs, by taking the medication on time, we prevent complications that can be really most could be more expensive and can cost more at a global healthcare system. So really, it's important to take medication on time. And several publications were done and show that patients who are adherent and may more than 90% of the time, so you don't miss more than 3 tablets per month, for example, do have really a great outcome. Now, the question is, why we do miss our pills? Why we don't take them on time? And here, based on my experience and studies done, there's two kinds of patients why we do miss. First is we miss because intentionally we miss. And mainly this group of patients, they have side effect. They take the drug and they have side effect. Let's say I'm going for a weekend with my kid for a vacation or want to be away. I don't want to be bothered by nausea. So therefore, I decide not to take my medication. Well, if we do decide not to take medications, iteratively, that can lead to resistance. Or you can see your doctor, and doctor will tell you you're responding very well, you're doing great, fantastic. You say, well, I'm feeling great. I have chronic leukemia. My doctor told me I'm in remission. Then it's allowed for me to drop my medication. We should not do that. You should always talk to your doctor, and we should always reiterate the importance of taking the medication on time. Now, if you have side effect, you need to talk to your doctor and try to treat side effect, because once you treat side effect, you take your drug. So the first issue in America, at least, 35% of our patients, when they have resistance, they have side effect and they don't take their medication. So it's really important to talk to your physician and discuss with him side effect in order to improve completely the outcome of this disease. Or second chapter would be unintentional. I forgot. Or like I'm taking other medication and I missed my dose. Again, in this situation, always when you have a drug prescribed, go to your doctor and tell them what you're taking, your pharmacist, I'm taking this and this and this medication. How shall I take them in order to optimize outcome? We know, for example, that certain drugs have interactions. You can take, for example, dasatinib or any other TKI with, let's say, proton pump inhibitors. So you need to think about it. And whenever you have an acute illness, talk to your doctor, your pharmacist, your mid-level providers in order to really clarify what you can take, what you cannot take. So therefore, I mentioned the chronic disease. I mentioned the importance of adherence in order to improve your outcome. I mentioned why we do forget to take our medication, why we don't take it, whether on purpose or it's really we forget or we have drug-drug interactions. Always talk to your doctor about that. So how we palliate, how we can overcome these problems, how we can remember to take our medicine. First, please talk to your medical personnel. Talk to your doctor, your pharmacist, your mid-level. Explain to them what's going on. Always talk about side effect. Talk about really drug interactions. So starting with talking to your medical personnel. Second is, sometimes simplify the treatment. Twice a day, once a day, in the morning, in the evening, try to make it simple and avoid a lot of drugs to be taken, vitamins, or sometimes treatments that are not really helpful to you. At least simplify them and drop them. Third, optimize your treatment with your rhythm of life. If you wake up in the morning at 7 o'clock, maybe if you have your breakfast at 8, you can take your medication at 10 o'clock. It's very simple. So to my patient, for example, when they have the drug taken twice a day on an empty stomach, I do recommend, for example, 10 by 10 rule. Means you can wake up in the morning having your breakfast, your lunch is at noon, so 10 o'clock is the middle of the morning, you're fine. And then if you have your dinner at 8 o'clock, you go to bed at 10, take it at 10. So 10 by 10 rule is easy to memorize. And whatever is good for you, do it. For example, if you're up very early in the morning, you start your day at 6 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, you take your pill. Do it in a way you remember it yourself in order really to keep taking your drug without missing any dose. And especially if there's any acute events happening, talk to your doctor about it and optimize your treatment. Don't miss any dose. Try not to miss any dose. Make it simple as much as you can. Now, certain people, I have patients who tell me, okay, I will put it on my iPad, on my iPhone, whatever. So just a reminder every morning, the way you do it for your alarm when you wake up in the morning, that's fine. You can do it this way. try to make it simple so you don't miss any dose. To summarize what I said, my message are the following. One, chronic leukemia, it's a really chronic disease where we can have a normal life if we take our medication. Therefore, really adherence is critical and it's very important. Third, if you have side effects, please adjust them in order not to miss any dose. Fourth, talk to your doctor about side effects, about the medication you're taking, about interactions. Fifth, make it simple on you, simplify the treatment, simplify the drugs. Use tools that are easy for you to memorize so that can help you taking your medication on time and optimize the outcome with your disease. Thank you very much for your attention.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Jabbour, for really setting the tone for today's program and also for highlighting how important it is to have this doctor-patient communication around issues of pill taking and also how important it is to really stay on schedule and take your pills and how to work out a schedule that works for you. We're going to hear more about that, but thank you so much for identifying it. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Ivo Abraham. Dr. Abraham is professor, Department of Pharmacy Practice and Science. He's investigator, Center for Health Outcomes and Pharmacoeconomic Research, College of Pharmacy, the University of Arizona, Chief Scientist, Matrix 45. Dr. Abraham is going to address the important role of your pharmacist, keeping track of multiple pills when you have different health conditions, and how and when to take different pills. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Abraham.
Thank you very much. And let me start out by saying that actually I'm a nurse by profession. I just happen to work in a college of pharmacy and am surrounded by pharmacists and teach the pharmacists of the future. And to echo a little bit what Dr. Jabbour said of talk to your physician, talk to your healthcare team, nurse practitioners, and so on, let's also realize that you're more likely to encounter your pharmacist more frequently than your physician or nurse practitioner. And we may have some stereotypes about pharmacists, you know, at CVS or Walgreens, they're somewhere behind those counters, pounding away on computers. In fact, that is what they seem to be doing, but they're trained for a lot of services, to provide a lot of services that may be critical in terms of adherence. So what do pharmacists bring beside that ability to dispense medications? Look at them as experts in drug therapy, the drugs themselves, but then also how they're part of an overall treatment regimen. Remember that pharmacists have a very helpful tool at their disposition, and that's your refill history. They can look up on the computer when you came in to have your medication refilled, and for them, it is a way of identifying potentially lapse medication taking events that may have happened, times that you may have missed your medication as you come in a few days later than usual. They're focused on disease management, and that's important. As Dr. Jabbour highlighted, CML has changed to now a chronic illness. Pharmacists can help you manage your disease and your diseases and the multiple treatments that go with it. How do pharmacists help you be more adherent? A key aspect is patient and caregiver education and counseling. And I would like to emphasize they're not only patient, but also caregiver. Most of us have the benefit of having someone in the home or in the family, extended family, who has taken a primary interest in our illness, in us being a patient. We've learned a lot from patients with renal transplant in that regard. And the support that they get from caregivers. And I think Professor Givington talked about that a little bit later. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. So that counseling, that education of patient and caregiver, you can discuss with them the benefits and risks of the medication. They can help you identify barriers in your daily life, barriers to good adherence. And they can counsel you with regard to the solutions to overcome those barriers. Because good adherence and promoting adherence is highly individualized. What works for one person doesn't work for another person. I'll return to that in a few minutes. What pharmacists can also help you with is to simplify your drug regimen. They can look at what you're prescribed, not only in terms of managing your CML and perhaps some of the side effects, but also some of the other medications that you may be taking for other health conditions. They can help you look at one's daily medications. They can help you examine whether you should be on some combination drugs. They may even recommend and consult with your treating physicians, with the prescriber, on discontinuing drugs that may be unnecessary. They can help you with identifying methods to improve your adherence. They can even identify helpful ways of scheduling your medications, how to do that in your daily life. And a third thing that pharmacists can bring and help you is, for instance, with your refill history, the monitoring that goes with that, but also identifying patients at risk. Patients at risk for not responding to some of the medications, patients at risk for non-adherence, for forgetting to take their medications, whether that is forgetfulness, forgetting because of forgetfulness, or whether that is because of perhaps depression and other life difficulties or health conditions. So what can you do to manage all of your medications? Let's not forget, and pun intended here, that forgetfulness is the main reason for non-adherence. By one study, 64% of us miss medication just because we plainly forget it. We did not intend to forget it, we just plainly forgot it. Help or have your pharmacist develop a schedule to not forget your medications. For some patients, for some of you, it may work with pill boxes. Other people may program their mobile phones to go off at certain times and so on. Think about what works for you. Not what you necessarily have heard works for other people. That may be a good start. But think about what may work for you. What can you integrate into your daily life? Is privacy a concern? You don't want to have a reminder go off, or you're getting, you know, a phone call coming in at an odd place, at an odd time, or something like that. Think about that aspect of privacy. Think about the notion of control, sense of control that you want to have, sense of responsibility that you want to have over your medication behavior. And then try to find that solution that works for you. And don't be discouraged if it works for you and not for someone else. Or if somebody else says, oh, I tried pill boxes and they don't work, or I tried pill boxes with alarms and they don't work, or I subscribe to the service then sends me a text message and that doesn't work. It may not work for person A, it may not work for person B, it may not work for person C, it may very well work for you. Also keep in mind the consequences of non-adherence. Keep in mind what could happen here. And we forget that. You know, once our blood pressure is under control, we forget that we're in a hypertensive patient. And with the shift of CML into a chronic illness, we know some patients forget that they really have a disease that is controllable, that is now a chronic illness. Ask yourself, what would I lose when I'm non-adherent or because of being non-adherent? And keep that forefront in your mind. Even ask your significant other, your partner, your spouse, a child, to maybe once in a while bring that up so that you keep in the forefront of your mind what would be the consequences of me missing pills. Because realistically, from a statistical point of view, your chance of losing response, cytogenetic response, hematological, molecular response, is directly tied to your adherence behavior. So keep that in the forefront of your mind. What would happen if indeed I skip my medication? Let me conclude by drawing an analogy. we learned from kidney transplant patients that actually noncompliance with immunosuppressive medication to prevent that they lose their kidney is something that is on their mind, but it doesn't take much for non-adherence, non-compliance, for down the pike serious complications to happen. Loop that back to what I just said about CML. It is your disease. It's also your health. It's your life. It's your responsibility. And do your very best. You may not be perfect. You will perhaps be perfect. Some other people may not be perfect, but do your very best and ask yourself what would happen if I really do not take this medication. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Abraham, and for really identifying some of the issues for people in terms of their taking the medicines and working with their pharmacist around really working out plans in terms of taking the medicines. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Barbara Given. Dr. Given is with University of she's actually University Distinguished Professor, Associate Dean for Research and Doctoral Program, College of Nursing, Michigan State University. And Dr. Given is going to provide some really practical guide to pill taking and how to develop a daily routine for pill taking and the technical and social supports to improve your pill taking. So I delightfully turn this program over to Dr. Given, who's going to really give you some very practical solutions here. Dr. Given?
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. You've already heard some very practical things from the two presenters before me. But I think the practical is going to make it easier to remember and not forget. And I, from experience in some of the studies that we've done, the more simple that everyone can make the regimen for their treatment, the better it is. They have to take pills every day, but their days aren't necessarily the same. So for you, you've already figured out that on Saturday and Sunday may be different than other days. You may switch shifts like nurses work sometimes days, sometimes nights, and they change off. Truck drivers have different shifts and whatever. So one has to think about how they're going to organize their take every day medication around those times, around travel, around multiple activities that are going on. The important thing is to cue yourself and have your pills and your pill containers at places that you have to do around the times that is that you want to take the meds. We heard from the first speaker about if you take it twice a day and you have to take it on an empty stomach looking at 10 and 10. Well, if 10 and 10 is the time, probably having the pills by the toothbrush would not be the appropriate place. But if someone has to take the meds on an empty stomach, having the pill containers by toothbrushes or shavers or Velcroed to something they deal to the coffee pot handle. We had patients who said they Velcroed their pills to the coffee pot. And so, therefore, they saw them every day at the same time. So thinking about that, if you take pills once a day, it is easier. If you have to take the pills twice a day, it is more difficult. So how are you going to work it into most days, and then how are you going to work it into when the day is not the same? Can you still use the toothbrush or the coffee pot on days that you don't have a regular day? How are you going to work it out? Most patients that we work with prefer to have a calendar that they at least have filled out. Whether they look at it every day and complete it every day is not really the issue for all of them, although for some they want a calendar that they use. Patients have calendars on their iPhones, iPads, just a regular old calendar, the calendars on their refrigerator with a magnet, and have it on so they can see what the plan is. There are hundreds and hundreds of reminder systems that are out there. If you would do a Google search under reminder systems, you will probably get somewhere around 300-400 that come up in the first search that include watches and pill boxes and timers and electronic pill boxes and electronic caps and glow caps and a variety of other things. But as was indicated earlier, you may not need something very complex. It may be very simple that you use. And so the recommendation from most of the people that we work with would suggest the simpler, the easier it is to work with. And then maybe after a while, you have to change to another format just so you don't become too complacent after 6 months or something like that. It is very important to have instructions and have the instructions written down. And I think the pharmacist is a very good person to gather the data from and review and make sure that you have the instructions. Because if someone gives you the instructions and they're not written down, most of us have a tendency to say, now, was that with food or without food? Or was that not to have any calcium or milk or anything with it or without it? What about taking with other pills? So writing it down is an easy way, and be sure that you have a clear written instructions to do so. I think the side effect issues have already been reported. Other things I think are really issue is, what about the off-time activities? What about when you forget your purse? What about the briefcase? What about when you travel? Have you planned ahead so that you have an emergency set of pills, if you will, or an extra set? Make sure that the pills are not in the luggage that is checked if that becomes an issue in traveling, because, as you know, luggage gets lost. I think that it is important to decide on what it is you want to be have as a reminder system, and then what you want to have as a recording system. And then if you use a pill dispensary or you load them for the week, look ahead to see when you're going to run out of medications and plan ahead. That is the other time that the patients that we work with indicates that's the biggest issue of adherence, is that they forgot that they were running out. They didn't make it to the pharmacy before it closed. The specialty pharmacy, they hadn't reminded the specialty pharmacy, and it came a day late or 2 days early, and this messed up their adherence behavior. Find one confidant or somebody to help you as a support person. Most individuals have family members. Some individuals say family members can hinder. Most individuals indicate that family members help. They can help with reminders. They can help monitor. They can help by going to pharmacy. We have some of our patients who have friends who they call every morning or send a text message, "Have you taken your pill?" To each other as a reminder to feel that support, that someone else is checking on them. And I think having a professional person as a confidant is where you can ask the easy question about if you're late in taking it, the question about what happens because I missed it, and a question if you can't remember or you don't know something about a certain food, whether this food is going to be a problem. Your medical maybe endocrinologist ordered a new medicine. What is this going to do? Do you need to talk to someone about it? So always have a professional confidant that you go to also. Many of the things I have already been talked about, so I think I will stop here and then see if questions will come up.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Given. Very excellent presentation, lots of very practical tips for people to use, and I think it's always challenging to come up with the right tip for the right person, and so you gave lots of different tips for everyone to kind of think about utilizing. So thank you. And our next speaker is Richard Dickens, and Rick is an oncology social worker, and Rick is the clinical supervisor at Cancer Care, our blood cancers program coordinator, and our mind-body project coordinator at Cancer Care. And Rick is going to present the free psychosocial services that you can access from Cancer Care. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm going to talk about the importance of building and strengthening your support network, and in that process inform you about the services of Cancer Care, as Carolyn mentioned, and in many ways reinforce what a lot of the other speakers have said as well. For CML patients and families, numerous issues can impact your lives, such as concerns about treatment, insurance, jobs, or who will help loved ones. Additionally, issues of self-esteem due to side effects as well as treatment-related fatigue can impact normal activities of daily living. These issues and others can create anxiety and uncertainty, and with chronic cancers over time, these stressors can impact in part the patient's health as well as the health of those providing support. That's why building relationships with all your members of your healthcare team, which usually includes a doctor, nurse, social worker, billing person, and other professionals, is so important. It is helpful to think of this as a partnership or collaboration. Don't be afraid to bring up any topic of concern to your healthcare team. Remember, your doctor and oncology team can't treat a problem if you don't make them aware of it. Some common questions to ask are, what is the long-term treatment plan? How will we know if the treatment is working? What is the likely treatment side effects? Who can I call and talk to if there is a problem? And will my insurance cover this? At the same time, it is equally important to build a personal support network consisting of family and friends from your neighborhood, your life, and your community center or house of worship. For many patients, it is hard to say, I need help. But for people who care about you, helping is one thing they can give. That is why, with a chronic illness, building a support network is so important. And by reaching out to as many as possible, you help the caregivers to spread the help and thereby help themselves. Accepting changes are normal during treatment can contribute toward nurturing your body and spirit, but stressors can also elicit feelings of sadness, anger, and frustration. What is happening to the patient can make family and friends feel helpless, scared, and sad as well. This is when it is helpful to seek help of a social worker or other professionals from organizations such as Cancer Care. Cancer Care has over 40 oncology social workers who inform people of resources and strategies for finding help, which can include building a phone tree to update your social network, creating a blog for those who are computer savvy, or mind-body-spirit techniques to calm the mind and relax the body during times of stress. At Cancer Care, along with education and resources, we provide some limited financial assistance, counseling, regional face-to-face groups, and national telephone and online support groups for patients and loved ones. Groups provide role models, emotional support, coping strategies, and validation. You're not alone. To many, support groups, social supports, and getting to know your healthcare team can go a long way in helping to confront the difficult challenges of cancer. And daunting as they are, with help, they are never impossible. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Rick, for presenting all the different services of Cancer Care so eloquently, and also I know there will be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Well, I want to thank our speakers, and we now have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Janitha to explain to you how to queue up for questions, and we're going to take as many of your questions as possible. If we don't get to your question, or you think of a question in another day or two or next week, you can call our 800 number at 1-800-813-HOPE and speak to one of our social work staff here. However, for right now, let's see how many questions we can take. Janitha?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Again, to ask an audio question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone.
And while we're waiting for an audio question, we do have some questions from our online participants, so I'm going to start with one of them. What should I do with unused or expired medicines? Dr. Shapour, could you address that?
Okay, well, first, you never take expired medication, and if you don't have extra pills or you don't use them, please talk to your doctor, to your mid-level providers or your pharmacist, and check with them about the expiration and what to do with this medication. Sometimes, for my patients, I'll ask them to keep them with them as long as they are not expired, because sometimes we have to reduce the dose and to use this medication. But definitely, first thing to do is to talk to your medical provider.
Now, we have another question from one of our participants online is, what are drug interactions? What does that word mean?
Drugs are metabolized through different organs and mainly the liver, and sometimes certain drugs can induce certain enzymes at the liver, and that can lead to this destroying the TKI you're taking for your chronic leukemia. So whenever you have different medication taken together, not necessarily at the same time, but morning or evening or during the same period, that can lead to the, what you call interaction that has, as a consequence, more toxicities and sometimes lack of efficacy of the drug you're taking.
Thank you. And our next questioner online is, so what issues do people whose CML is in remission need to be aware of? What are some issues that they need to be thinking about? Again, Dr. Jabbour.
You know, the issue that we usually face when we're taking the medication and we're doing fine, we forget that we have chronic leukemia, and if we don't take the medication, the disease may come back. So please keep in mind that you have to take your medication nonstop, even if you're responding very nicely, and mainly when you're responding very nicely. So do not forget to take your medication, even if you're responding. One. Second, at chronic use, there's a chronic side effect. Do not underestimate them. Talk to your doctor about them, because we need to manage them. And in that way, you take your medication and you don't drop your medication.
Excellent. And there is a question from one of our online participants, is whether anyone with CML has to worry about getting ill from a suppressed immune system. Again, Dr. Jabbour?
Studies have shown that patients with CML, they do not get more infection than the normal population. So you should not be worried about it. However, if you're surrounded by sick people, you should take the normal measures like hand washing and not having intimate contact with somebody with upper respiratory infections. But there's no extra measures for patients with CML.
And another question from one of our online participants is about immunizations. Are there some immunizations that people living with CML should routinely be getting?
Again, it's like any other population. A patient above 60, they take the influenza or whatever, whether they have CML or not, exactly same recommendations. Again, chronic myeloid leukemia does not predispose a patient to more infection than normal population.
And we have another question. What is the right way to store medicine? And I'm going to ask Dr. Abraham if you could address that, and just to how do people store their medicines? What is the best way to do that?
Well, it depends what medication it is. And the first recommendation I would give is ask the pharmacist. There's some medications that are temperature sensitive. There's some medications that are light sensitive. Ask your pharmacist, because it may also have an impact on the adherence reminder systems or whatever you may choose to use to help you take your medication better on time. So it really is different from medication to medication.
Are there any specific things in general for most medicines that people should be aware of?
Not direct light, not direct sunlight. Not above certain temperatures, not below certain temperatures. The best is inside in a normal living environment, I would say. And I don't know, Dr. Jabbour, if there's anything you would add for specific medications that you tend to prescribe?
No, I totally agree with you. I have nothing to add.
And then there's a question about the cost of the medicine as being a problem. We know that that can sometimes be a problem for people. I'm going to ask Mr. Dickens, to address the question of, so what if the cost of my medicine is a problem? What should I do?
Well, definitely. Thank you, Carolyn. Definitely calling organizations like Cancer Care. A lot of what Cancer Care does, we don't always have solutions to a lot of the problems. And unfortunately, it is a bigger issue in terms of the debate around our healthcare system and falling through the cracks or not finding those resources, even with insurance, sometimes to address co-pays and things like that. However, that doesn't mean it's not without hope. And there are organizations out there. The Leukemia Lymphoma Society does address blood cancers. Cancer Care addresses all cancers. And because we've been around for so long, if we don't have something that can directly address the expense and the copay related to that, then in a in all probability, we might have some referrals and some potential other organizations you might not be aware of, and even your healthcare team might not be aware of, that you might be able to get that addressed. I'm going to raise, too, Carolyn, what that brings up a lot of times and was referred to in the talk by our other presenters as well. Is anyone dealing with a chronic illness and with an illness such as cancer can really affect the mood, not only the medications sometimes, but definitely just the stress of cancer. Depression and anxiety are not uncommon during a diagnosis of cancer and especially in a chronic condition. And those are sometimes issues that can be addressed by working with a social worker. That might be some counseling, and we do telephone counseling for people around the country through cancer care, but also working with somebody to help deal with those side effects, the depression that might be a result of being on medication the rest of your life, or the anxiety about missing it or staying adherent. And those are sometimes finding somebody, an impartial person outside the family, that can be very helpful in helping you navigate those emotional issues related to the cancer and help you find ways to manage that so that you could manage the necessary adherence to your treatment.
And Rick, could you comment a bit about just this, being in a support group and the value of that for some people?
Sure. Thank you, Carolyn. Cancer Care does run online and telephone support groups for people around the country. We're unique in that all of our support groups and anyone who calls Cancer Care does speak directly to a master's degree social worker who specializes in oncology. As much as we know as oncology social workers, and I've run many, many groups both online, face-to-face, and telephone over the years, I am always reminded when I run a group that there's nobody in many cases more important to really understanding what you're dealing with and the struggles you're going through than another person who's going through it. And being in groups, even if it's not CML-specific or leukemia-specific, there are many commonalities for people who are dealing with cancer. And talking to other people, there is a deep insight and understanding of what you're going through, so it really is a very supportive environment for many people, as well as you're talking then to other people who are dealing with this on a daily basis themselves and have, with the help of their family, friends, network, and medical team, come up with their own solutions. And some of those solutions that they've found to maybe the questions you're grappling with are best served among patients, which happens oftentimes in support groups.
Excellent. That's excellent. Now, we have another question from one of our online participants. So what can I do to help ensure that I get the information I need to use my medicine safely and appropriately? And Dr. Given, could you comment on that?
Well, I believe that patients really have to be assertive and get the information that they need. And I think we have a couple lines of response to do that. The first, of course, is the physician and nurses who give the prescription and order the drug and give the instructions. And the patient should not hesitate in getting every last speck of detail that they feel that they need in situation from them. However, if that's still not enough or if it is not clear, I think today, I think the pharmacists are a wonderful source. There are wonderful pharmacy schools and med centers these days where when a patient gets an oral prescription, a pharmacy tech or somebody comes over and does family caregiver and patient instruction, and also they seem to be available online. And for the specialty pharmacies, many of the specialty pharmacies that distribute the drugs by mail also have a call-in system and a hotline where they have nurses or pharmacy techs providing information. So from the experience we've had with oral agents, there's been a lot of resources available, and people just need to ask, and do not hesitate and ask because it is information they need to respond to their treatment.
Let me have a question from one of our people in a rural area, one of our online participants, who really is asking about the living in a small town and the issue of having to get their medicines, and that the pharmacy in that small town may not have the medicine that they need, and what might be a good plan for them to develop. Dr. Given, could you address that?
Well, yes, and then Evo maybe can address it as well. There are numerous specialty pharmacies, and the CVS and Rite Aid and Diplomat, and there are a number of them who will have lots of these special drugs that they can mail so that the patients have them a day or so ahead of time, and they seem very convenient and I think are user-friendly when you call in. So I think they should take advantage of that. The center that prescribes the medication for the patient should be able to tell them, the pharmacists that they, specialty pharmacies that handle these and carry them out. And we found them really being delivered pretty much with ease, no matter where the individual lives. Evo, do you have any comment?
Just maybe one addition, and that is if you're in the U.S. and you're Medicare eligible for Medicare Part D, there is now the so-called medication therapy management support, and it's usually provided by call centers staffed by, as Barbara also referred to, it's similar, by pharmacy techs, pharmacists, nurses, who can help you with the questions and any questions that you may have.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you. That's excellent. Now we have another question. What do I need to know about my medicines when I travel? And so I'm going to ask all of you to weigh in on that one, because that's really a big issue in terms of people who may be traveling. And also, if we could include both travel just from one city to the next that's nearby, but also traveling in different time zones or even travel internationally, in terms of what kind of things that people need to put in place when they travel in terms of their pills. So Dr. Jabbour, do you want to start?
Well, again, I want to highlight the principle I mentioned at the beginning. So whether you travel or you're not, you need to always remember how important it is to take your medication. No, one. Second, you should not be rigid. I mean, flexible. We say you should take your medication once a day or every 12 hours. Now, if you're traveling and you take your medication every 10 hours, that's fine. It's not a big deal, provided you take your medication. Now, if you miss a dose, do not make it up. Don't take four pills at the same time. If you miss a dose, you miss a dose. Do not try to make it up. And fourth, as my colleagues have said, you know, try what's worked for you. Like, try to adjust the medication you take according to your life schedule, and that should be okay.
And Dr. Abraham?
If it is a TKI, tyrosine kinase inhibitor, you have, as Dr. Jabbour said, a little bit of a time window that you can work with. So if you're going to be going, say, from the West Coast to the East Coast, I would say, you know, you have probably about an hour that you can, so to speak, play with. If it's more time zones, then you really have to start rethinking your medication schedule. And here, too, what you can do is, for a number of days, gradually start shifting your medication intake by, for instance, 1 hour. And as you get closer to the travel day, then you will be, again, within that two-hour window that you could do. And whether you go to Europe, for instance, and it's 6 hours from the East Coast or 9 hours from the West Coast, that will enable you to accommodate your CML medication. The good news is you have that latitude with TKIs. AIDS patients are in a much more difficult position in that regard. So the good news is you have some latitude. The bad news is don't forget to take your medication.
You and Dr. Given.
Well, the one thing I would say is I think it is important to have the pills written down and maybe even an extra prescription along, because we have had people get stranded in different cities in snowstorms and things like that and run out of pills. so that they would have extra prescription for maybe just a couple pills, but more importantly, taking a couple extra with them, even when they go visit granddaughters 5 hours away because something could happen along the way. So we have tried to remind people to think ahead and to think what will the next time they're going to need to take a pill, and if they were 3 to 5 hours late in getting home because of something or other, or a day late getting home, what were they going to do and to prepare for that? And then clearly not packing their medications and their luggage.
Carolyn, so I'd like to jump in also and just say, especially in those areas, and as was mentioned, if you travel more than 3 hours just within the United States, but maybe to Europe or somewhere else, preparation for that, probably writing out a schedule would be helpful, working with family or friends to really have that and recognize and identify what the different time zones and when you'll be doing that. And also working with somebody in your healthcare team, perhaps. And this is where social workers can work with people to really work out a schedule. It's probably going to be more helpful if it is beyond 2 or 3 hours difference and a longer travel to really write it out during the course of your trip to really see what times I need to, so you have a reference to turn back to. It can get very confusing otherwise.
Now, the other thing is, of course, the mode of transportation. Now, what happens if you're flying? Dr. Jabbour, do you usually we recommend that obviously people keep the airlines will recommend that people keep their pills in a pill in the original pill container that was given to them from the pharmacist. Is that how do you work with your patients around that?
There's no special accommodation. You have your pills, you keep them with you, and take extra pills, but there's no special measures to take if you're traveling on a plane.
I mean, in terms of keeping them, so going through security, if they're in a pill container.
Pill container should be enough.
Yeah, no, that hasn't been a problem.
Excellent. Okay. And so now we have another question from one of our callers, is what can I do to ensure that my medications are kept safely away from my children? Again, I'm going to ask each of you to address that. Dr. Jabbour?
Well, like all medication should be away from children, should not have access to the pills, especially if you have young ones. Keep them away. Don't keep them on the counter, up in boxes. So the measures that you take with all other medication should be respected, and whether you take TKI or any other medication.
Excellent. And Dr. Abraham?
I have nothing to add. It's a very good recommendation. Keep them safe. Keep them high. Avoid accidents, as we've all seen them happen.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Gibbon?
I have nothing to add.
Okay. Rick?
Not really, but just be prepared and recognize the importance of that, like any household items or otherwise, that depending on the age of the child, a lot of times little children, what is their reach and how curious might they be as opposed to adolescents and then teenagers. It probably would vary depending on what age your children are in the household, but I wouldn't undercut how important that is to really recognize you don't want them to access that in any way, so take the precautions necessary.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been extraordinary. And I want to thank all of you, as well as our online participants who asked such really great questions, and all of you who've been listening as well. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education program, and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And with that in mind, I just want to reiterate with all of you the services that you can access from Cancer Care. So although our program is about to end, the services that you can access from Cancer Care, those continue endlessly. And so at Cancer Care, we have a staff of over 40 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we're here to provide a host of services, from practical and financial assistance to counseling or chances to talk to somebody about your concerns. We also see people in group settings, and we do that both over the phone and online, again, for ease of access for all of you. And, of course, we also have these workshops, and we have all types of materials and booklets and websites. So there's lots of information that you can access from our from Cancer Care. But most importantly, I don't want anyone to leave this program thinking that you're alone. I want you to know that you're now part of a community of support, and we're here to help you. And we are simply a phone call away at 1-800-813-HOPE, or you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org. Again, I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.